ओम गणपति नंदस्य जनार्जन सलकाय चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोविष्टां स्थापितं दिनभूषले सायं रूपकदामायां ददाति सापन्नतिकम्। Yesterday we heard how Arjuna was in such a difficult position because wherever he looked, he saw unfortunateness for himself. His a wonderful purport. Now, how many of you have Bhagavad Gita's with you here? Anyone who, I think at least it would be handy to have a Bhagavad Gita during the class probably. So we could keep Bhagavad Gita's here and you can just return them at the end of class. And if you need them for other reasons, we'll loan them to you. Or if you don't have one, we'll give them to you. So maybe you could hand out Bhagavad Gita's to those who need it. And then just at the end of class you can return them. If you turn to page 58, text 30 of the first chapter, in the purport, Prabhupada explains the entire essence of the Bhagavad Gita, as well as the conditioned soul's predicament just in this purport. The verse itself is, I am now unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune, O Krishna, killer of the Kesi demon. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, Arjuna envisions only painful reverses in the battlefield. He would not be happy even by gaining victory over the foe. The words nimittani viparitani are significant. When a man sees frustration in his expectations, he thinks, why am I here? Everyone is interested in himself and his own welfare. No one is interested in the Supreme Self. Arjuna is showing ignorance of his real self-interest by Krishna's will. One's real self-interest lies in Vishnu or Krishna. The conditioned soul forgets this, and therefore he suffers material pains. Arjuna thought that his victory in the battle would only be a cause of lamentation for him. So the difference between a conditioned living entity and a devotee, a pure devotee, is that the conditioned living entity has himself in the center of his thought processes. And he's thinking, how will I become happy? And therefore he attempts to go to school, he attempts to do this, he attempts to do that. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritino arjuna artiki gyakstarata ti gyani chavaritasava. Even, he'll go to God, thinking, I need wealth, I'm in distress, I want knowledge, I'm curious. I. The center is making me happy. That is not bhakti, that is conditioned life. And we tend, naturally, when we enter devotional service, we take this mood with us, that I am the center and what's good for me. This is not bhakti, it is not devotional service. Bhakti means transferring the center of our life to Krishna's pleasure instead of what's good for me, what's going to make me happy, what's going to make my family happy, what's going to make my country happy, my friends happy, my body happy. What is going to make Krishna happy? And my pleasure, what makes me happy, is when Krishna is pleased. That is bhakti. So one's real self-interest lies in pleasing Krishna. This is bhakti, when we understand that point. It's a complete transference from the center of our life, from ourselves to Krishna. And just like if we decorate ourselves, the mirror image automatically becomes beautiful. So similarly, when we decorate Krishna and make Krishna happy, automatically we become happy and beautiful. This is Krishna consciousness. This simple change, so simple to describe. I'm no longer interested in pleasing myself independently. Rather, I'm going to do whatever makes Krishna happy. So Arjuna, at this point of the Bhagavad Gita, has not come to this platform. But what platform he's come to is that he's realized that no matter how hard I try on my own, no matter how many excuses and reasons and shastric arguments I quote, I am still confused about what I should do to make myself happy. And what does he do? We heard that right at the end yesterday. Shashastiham sarimam tam papanam. He surrenders unto Krishna. I cannot understand it myself. I accept you as my spiritual master. You please tell me how and what is my duty. What is the best thing for me to do? This is the first step. Rupa Goswami describes this in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu Nectar Devotion. Ado means what? First. Guru Pada Ashraya. Guru Pada Ashraya. Take shelter of the lotus feet of Guru. This is the first step. So Arjuna has taken the first step. So we heard about that yesterday. Now we're going to find out what happens immediately when Arjuna takes that step. He says in text 7 of the second chapter on page 81, Shishastiham Sarimam Tam Papanam. I'm a sorrel surrendered to you. You tell me what I should do. You please instruct me. Now, the next verse, text 8. Arjuna, after saying that, why doesn't Krishna immediately begin to instruct him? He surrenders. But why doesn't Krishna immediately instruct him? So the acharyas have answered this question by posing Krishna saying to Arjuna and saying something to him that tests him. Oh, you're so miserable. But if you just fight, you'll win the kingdom and then your misery will be gone. So you don't need a spiritual master, you just need to fight. So go and fight. Win the kingdom. It's yours. That was Krishna's test, because the spiritual master doesn't just immediately accept the disciple. He has to test his sincerity to see if the disciple actually understands why he's surrendering and what he's doing. So therefore, the acharyas have explained that Krishna told this to Arjuna, and therefore Arjuna answers in the next verse, no, that will not satisfy me. Why? Because I can find no means to drive away this grief, which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it, to remove this grief. Even if I win the prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like the demigods in heaven. Even if I take over the entire heaven, Swargaloka, I will still not be happy. So no, I will not fight. You instruct me. I'm depending upon you. Because by my own efforts, I've gotten nowhere. As a conditioned soul, I don't like to surrender to anyone. It is against my nature to admit that I am weak and tiny and insignificant. Especially for men. And in Kali Yuga, also especially for women. But previous times, the women didn't have so much problem even surrendering to a husband. But nowadays, that is almost impossible too. Everyone is, yes, me, center, important, powerful, strong. Why should I serve anyone? Who says that I am dependent? Servant, that's the worst possible thing one can be in Kali Yuga, servant. This is called Maya. So no one wants to surrender and admit that they're helpless and they need another. So when one really understands that, then he surrenders to a spiritual master. And Arjuna, after saying that, said, having spoken thus, as Sanjay is reciting in text 9, Arjuna, chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight. And he fell silent. O descendant of Bharata, at that time Krishna smiling. Very interesting. Actually, the words in this, in the Sanskrit, is Prahasan Iva Bharata. Iva means like, and Prasan means smiling. Prahasan means smiling. So Krishna was, he was like smiling. Something like smiling. And Krishna was smiling in the midst of both the armies. Arjuna was completely miserable. He was trembling. He had no strength left. Practically he was crying because he had to fight. And Krishna just smiled when he said this. Prabhupada explains it in the purport. Why he was, it's like smiling. Because they were friends and they're talking. And Krishna actually had drove him right in the chariot, right in front of Bhishma and Arjuna, Bhishma and Drona. And then Arjuna became so upset. Krishna had done this purposefully, and then Arjuna surrendered, and their relationship changed. No more are we just friends. Yes, we have a friendly relationship, but now I'm your student, your shishya. So before, with friends, you joke. But when dealings between spiritual master and disciple, very grave and very serious. So the like smiling was what's called a rasa sandhi, the change of rasa between friend to disciple, from sakha to vatsal, from like parental to parental relationships to friend, from friendship. So Krishna's smile changed to one of, to a facial expression of gravity. Very serious business. So what's the first thing, that instructions that Krishna gives to Arjuna? In the next verse, text 11. And he's going, in the next verses, and especially this whole section actually, this first part of the second chapter, or rather the second part of the second chapter, Krishna is going to remove the basic ignorance of Arjuna. The first thing he says, asochan anvasochas tam. Asochan, we heard in the class by Dinabandhu Prabhu, socha means lamentation. Shoka, lamentation. So asochan anvasocha tvam. And this verse I want you to know. You are lamenting for that which is not worthy of lamentation. Asochan anvasocha tvam. Tvam means you. You are lamenting for that which no person should ever lament about. Although you are speaking as if you are a learned man, what you are saying no learned man will ever say. So the first thing he does when dealing with his disciple is insult him. And said, oh, you are the great Arjuna, so learned. But learned people will not say what you just said. So you are a fool. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. Why? Gatasana anugatuns cha nanu sochanti pandita. The wise person, not people like you, do not lament either for the living, gatasan agatasan cha, or the dead. Whatever condition the body is in, or the person is in, the wise person will not lament. Why? This is going to be explained. The living we shouldn't lament for, and the dead we shouldn't lament for. Why? The soul is eternal, can never die. So either living or dead, there is no death for the soul. And what's on the other side? Yes. So there's the soul that cannot be killed, and
the body is anyway always dead.
And the body is always dead. This is going to be explained in detail. This is the most primary. When we went to school, when we were 5 years old, we'd all sing A B C D E F G. This is A B C D E F G. And notice it begins with, just like the alphabet A, B, begins with A, so this begins with Asochan, A, also. Because this is baby knowledge. And this baby knowledge, that we are souls, that we are not the body, is far beyond any other religious scripture, practically in the world. This simple knowledge, that we are eternal. Just imagine how the world would be changed if people were living on the principle that they are eternal. The cities of the world, how they would be changed. So Krishna is begins attacking, excuse me, this basic illusion of Arjuna, that he is the body. And all his reasoning, all the reasons that he gave, from what's going to happen to me, if, you know, the sins that are going to attack me, the family will be ruined, this, that, degradation of women, vanasankara produced, so many things based on the illusion that I am the body. And when that illusion is taken away, when we understand I am soul, then beyond the baby knowledge that I am not the body, we'll speak about this in a few minutes. I am not the body. That is not very much information about who I am. That tells who I am not. Just like saying, what do you know about me if I say, I am not this gray sweater? Okay, I am not the gray sweater. Does that mean I may be a red sweater? Or a purple sweater? No, because it doesn't. I am not the gray sweater. It tells what I am not. It doesn't tell what I am. That is real knowledge, when we learn who we actually are, not who we are not. We are not this, we are not this. But what am I? Who am I? Who? What does that mean? Spirit soul. And who is the spirit soul? What is this swabhava? Yes, keep going. Part and parcel of Krishna. We're getting less abstract, but we're still pretty abstract.
Subordinate.
We are subordinate. That means servant. Yes, we're servants of Krishna. Yeah, we're blissful servants of Krishna in the spiritual world, and now it's completely covered. Jivara Srupoi. Krishna, of Krishna, Nitya Das. We are the eternal servants of Krishna. And that means that we have nothing to do with the material world. Because Krishna, we say that when Krishna descends to the material world, but actually Krishna never descends to the material world. He is never in the material world. He's never in the material world. Wherever Krishna is, that's why we say he has lotus feet. And we sometimes see pictures of Krishna standing on a lotus. That means that he is not in the material world. His feet are always where? Vrindavanam prityaja padam ekam nagastiti. That means that Krishna never, ever, ever, ever takes one step out of Vrindavan. So if you are Krishnera Nitya Das, that means that you also are in with Krishna and Vrindavan. Sarup Sarvahoy Golokete Titi. That means that the actual Sarup of the living entity, his Sarup, his living, his form, is situated in Goloka. That is who we are. That we, and this is described in what scriptures? In more detail. Which scriptures are this described in more detail? Who we are in relationship with Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam, Rama Samhita, Chaitanya Charitamrita especially, and Bhakti Rasamrita, that's the one I'm thinking of. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu describes how we can be Krishna Das in one out of five relationships. We could be Krishna, just seeing the greatness of Krishna, and being neutral, or we could be Krishna's servant, or we could be Krishna's friend, or Krishna's parent, or have a conjugal relationship with Krishna. This is the complete uncovering of our Swarup. So if we are in Vrindavan, playing with Krishna, as we heard yesterday, Mother Yasoda dealing with Krishna, if we're in Vrindavan playing with Krishna, that is more knowledge than just knowing we are not the body. That is advanced knowledge. But here, Arjuna is getting ABC. You are not your body. Now, in text 12, now, also I see the way my mood is developing to the course. What I'm hoping that you devotees, how I'm hoping I can serve you, is give you specific sections of the Bhagavad Gita and hopefully deepen your realization of these sections of the Bhagavad Gita so that you can see that they're very sweet. This is not dry knowledge. It is not dead knowledge. But you have to read and go deeply into it. And it will come alive and it's practical, meant to be applied to a life. And not only that, but it's very, very good to... These are basic preaching points from the Bhagavad Gita. So I would like you to learn to preach on these points. So the first point that we covered yesterday was what? Yeah. Huh? Yes, Krishna is Bhakta Vatsal. Could you preach about that point for a few minutes? I hope so. Listen like that. Listen, let it touch your heart. Listen to see if you actually believe this and understand it. And can you explain it to others? Then the next point we talked about, that we just ended on yesterday. What was that? Yeah. You live up. That was where we started today more, I think. Yeah, that we have to serve. Now, these are the basic points. The basic preaching points and basic points we should preach to ourselves about. That we need a spiritual master. We can't get out ourselves. Material life means perplexity. No matter if I fulfill every single one of my material desires, I will still not be happy. We dream so many times during the day and all night, if I had this, if I had this money, only if this person would fall in the Jamuna and drown and I never would have to see him again, only if I had a big car, only if I would get this and that and bum, only if I was stronger or not sick. If we had every single one of our desires fulfilled, we would not be happy, we would be miserable. So how could we get out? We don't want to be miserable. So the first step, Ado Guru Parasrai, Shishyasya Ham Sarivam Tvam Papana. What does that mean? That we have to surrender to a spiritual master. Then the next point is the one we're discussing now. The third point is that we are not our body. And we brought it to the point that not only we are not our body, but we are spirit souls. And not only are we spirit souls, but what are we? Eternal servants of Krishna. And not only are we eternal servants of Krishna, but we're eternal servants of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. And we can serve in such sweet ways, just exchanging love with Krishna. This is called rasa. We are meant to serve Krishna, and this rasa is so powerful. Love is so powerful. Love of Krishna is so powerful that it controls Krishna even. This is Krishna consciousness. But now we are not our body. ABC. Text 12. Never was there a time, Krishna is going to begin to explain this point. Never was there a time when I did not exist. Remember, they're in the middle of the battlefield. Nor you. So Krishna is saying, never was in the past, I always existed. And Arjuna, you always existed. So never was there a time when I did not exist. So always in the past I existed and you existed. Nor you, nor all these kings, all these warriors that are standing before us ready to fight in this battlefield. They always existed in the past. I always existed in the past. And you also always existed in the past. Nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So Krishna is saying that I was always me, you were always you, and each of these kings were always individual kings. In the present, it's clear that I am me, you are you, and they are all themselves. And in the future also, I will be Krishna, you will be Arjuna, and they will also be their individual selves. So this eternality of the soul, it's true in the past, it's true in the present, it's true in the future. So what does this do to Mayavad philosophy? This brings in a very interesting point that Prabhupada explains in the purport. Just this one verse defeats Mayavad philosophy. Krishna doesn't say, you were Arjuna in the past, and you and I was me in the past, and in the future, after hearing the Bhagavad Gita, you will become me. You will become one. We will all become one. Krishna doesn't say that at all. He's stressing the individuality of the soul. So after hearing Bhagavad Gita, Krishna knows Arjuna is going to become pure and liberated from illusion, and yet Arjuna will still be Arjuna. He will not become Brahman. Mayavad philosophy finished with this one verse. Now, this purport, there are so many very powerful arguments against Mayavad philosophy. Using this knowledge, next time you have to preach to, there are so many arguments we use against Mayavadis. The typical one when the Sankirtan devotees always would talk about, they go on Sankirtan, and especially in the 60s and the 70s, 1960, 1970, you'd find some young person and he would say, oh, we are all one. So the Sankirtan devotee would say, well, then give me all your money. What's the problem then? If we're all one, if I am you and you are me, then just give me all your money. Suddenly we would become two, because he would not do that. Or even, I can't remember who it was. But one devotee said, then give me your shirt. This person he was talking to was very determined and proud, so he took off his shirt. Then give me your undershirt. Okay, now give me your pants. But still, they did not become one. Prabhupada explains in the purport, the Mayavadi theory that after liberation, the individual soul, separated by the covering of maya or illusion, will merge into the impersonal Brahman and lose its individual existence is not supported herein by Lord Krishna, the supreme authority. Nor is the theory that we only think of individuality in the conditioned state supported herein. So, it's not that the individuality doesn't only apply to the body. And when the body is removed, then we merge, just like the example the Mayavadis give, is that if you take a cup of water, yes, there is the cup, and then there is the cup of water, and then there is the ocean. But But then when the covering is removed of the cup, then the water again merges into the ocean. That's the example of the Mayavadis. So they